This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Jill Kaufman. We'll start today by looking at the tough call made by the father of Alexander Ciccolo to tip off the FBI to his son's recent radicalization.
It was that tip that led federal authorities to arrest the 23-year-old on July 4th, after the FBI had been monitoring him since September. By then, Ciccolo was expressing radical Islamist views, and the feds say he had Molotov cocktails in his apartment. They arrested him for allegedly receiving firearms from an undercover FBI agent.
But Ciccolo also has a long history of mental illness. So the question is, could he have been committed to a mental health facility instead of arrested? That is a question that Harvey Silverglade, a Cambridge-based criminal defense attorney and civil liberties lawyer, well-known around these parts, has been thinking about. And he joins us in the studio along with WBUR senior reporter David Boeri, who has been covering the Ciccolo case for WBUR. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
David, let's start with you. First, talk us through what happened in Ciccolo's case, how his father tipped off the FBI, and then what happened.
According to the memorandum that was filed by the prosecution in this case, the FBI was contacted by his father, Robert Ciccolo, a captain with the Boston Police Department, in September of last year. And essentially the message was, my son has gone off the deep end. He has a long history of mental illness. He has been obsessed with Islam for the last 18 months. He's now talking about going to Syria or Iraq to fight with ISIS. He calls America the great Satan. So with that, the FBI, the Joint Terrorist Task Force, began its response. And typical to that response is the use of cooperating witnesses, informants. People, they sent them out to meet Mr. Ciccolo, the youngster. They found him. They began discussions. They found that he had been on Facebook under the name of Ali Al-Amriki, and he was talking about ISIS encouraging the killing of Americans, celebrating that great war against Satan. So they do what they typically do, and that is a sting. It led up to the 4th of July. He became more involved. They were following him. He was talking about, he did buy a pressure cooker. He was talking about bombing a cafeteria and a college. At that point, they asked him if he needed help getting weapons. They then procured 4 assault weapons. They provided them to him on the 4th of July, and he was arrested.
Okay. So it could have gone another way, right? He could have been taken in or been committed by his family or someone else. The key issue here is the balancing of his well-being and then public safety, and that comes from the judge and from his father. So what does it mean to commit someone?
So there is an alternative in Massachusetts. I'm reading from Chapter 123, Section 12, and that is that any person may make an application to a district court for what's called a warrant of apprehension for a 3-day commitment to a facility of a mentally ill, here's the key phrase, a mentally ill person whom the failure to confine would cause a likelihood of serious harm. So that's possible. It's a 72-hour commitment, and during that time, a psychiatrist or someone so qualified makes a determination. If, in fact, that determination is commitment, then a judge can send that person to a confinement for 6 months, and then after that, periods lasting a year. That is a possible alternative. In this case, it wasn't used.
Right. And we don't know enough yet about Robert Ciccolo, Alexander's father, at least not yet, that could say why did he make one decision over another. Harvey Silverglade, let's just lay out the plot again as laid out in the court documents. Ciccolo's plot, it seems pretty serious. He planned an attack, allegedly, on a university campus, that he had purchased pressure cookers to make bombs that were similar to those used in the Boston Marathon bombing. And in your view, we want to hear how you think law enforcement should have proceeded with him.
Well, given the young Ciccolo's long history of mental illness and treatment, which he started to refuse when he became an adult, it seems to me this is a rather easy case. He should have been committed to a secure, locked mental facility where he would have undergone study and treatment to determine if he was mentally ill, which I think is obvious, and whether he could be treated. I think that he would have probably been in a mental hospital for quite a long time under treatment, that he would have gotten and would have been fairly good treatment.
So at this point, he's gone through this FBI investigation. He's been the topic of it because of tip-off from his father. So are you second-guessing the father?
No, I think that the father, he had a choice. He could have gotten a doctor. He, after all, the father's a police officer. I'm sure he's done this before in the course of his career, had somebody committed to a mental hospital because he was dangerous to himself or others. It seems to be the obvious description of his own son. But assuming that the father didn't think of that and went to the FBI, it was really the FBI that should have realized this is a mentally ill young man. Instead, they sent out a crew in order to entrap the young man into committing a further crime.
I'm sure there's going to be a lot of information coming out in the coming weeks, and hopefully some good reporting, David Boeri, on who is this family and how it is that a law enforcement officer chose to call the FBI versus Bridgewater State or however one gets committed. We have a clip. The FBI released a video of the young Chicolo talking to investigators after his arrest, and I want to play this for you. Let's hear what he had to say.
What do you feel about the group that calls himself ISIS or ISIL? They're doing a good thing?
Yeah, they are. They're doing a good thing.
What's good?
They're implementing the Sharia. They're freeing people from oppression.
So in the clip you hear the FBI, I believe, and the young Chicolo talking about his support of the Islamic State. It seems unusual. David Boeri, why might the FBI release this video, in your opinion? And Harvey will hear you in a moment.
So first of all, we have to point out that at that point, Chicolo had waived his Miranda rights. So you hear this interrogation, or it's more like an interview. It strikes me it's more like a college newspaper reporter interviewing the campus radical or revolutionary. It is established, it's introduced in the record at the hearing last week in order to make the government's case that Chicolo should be held without bail, that he's dangerous. And here was the evidence of his danger. What's interesting is the FBI has now begun to record interviews. They never did before. They never had a policy. They've now begun to do it. That was introduced in court of this particular section for clear reason. And then afterwards, they made a point of distributing it to everybody in the media so that it could be broadcast on the media. My thought is, again, you have two interests. You have a father's interest, a narrow interest perhaps, in seeking mental health treatment for his son, the well-being of his son, and then you have the other interest, which is public safety. And we are told, and I don't question it, public safety always has to trump that issue. But whether the father knew that seeking help for his son would end up with his son's interview being broadcast across the country is another matter.
Right, and that, again, is new-ish for the FBI to be doing this. Harvey Silverglate, unusual, and also what do you make of the FBI's decision to release this?
It is extraordinarily unusual for the FBI to release a document like this. I don't think they did it in order to inform the public of any danger. I think they did it in order to justify their own rather bad conduct, I think, in this case, their own to try to justify their motives for the way they treated this mentally ill young man.
So some public relations, perhaps.
I think it was a public relations release.
Let's
yes.
get into another voice on this. Donald Stern, thank you for waiting on the line and listening. Donald Stern is, of course, the former U.S. attorney for the District of Massachusetts. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you.
What is your reaction to, as you've been listening to Harvey Silverglate, to his argument here? And why, in your view, also, then, would that interview video get released?
Well, let me first give my reaction to the way the investigation was handled and the ultimate arrest. I think clearly these are extraordinarily difficult cases for law enforcement. They, of course, have to get it right every single time. And if they get it wrong, you end up with a Charleston or Newtown or Chattanooga or, as we well know, Boston Marathon. So these are very, very difficult cases, particularly as the media has reported in other instances where there's a lone wolf, so-called lone wolf, someone who appears as, let's assume this is what happened here, someone who had in mind to act independently, perhaps influenced by outside forces, but not part of some organized group in the U.S. So these are very difficult cases, and I suspect that the law enforcement, the FBI, had in mind and were that they wanted to encourage family members to come forward, not discourage them. So as you think it through, you have to think, what did law enforcement know and what could they have acted at any particular time?
Right. And with your experience, though, did they have an option? Did the FBI have an option after it got a tip? They could have done something else, made a different kind of decision?
That's what I was about to say. So the tip, based upon the tip, what could they have done? Could they have sought to have him committed based upon the tip? We don't have all the psychiatric information. We don't have all the information. But if the question is, could he have been civilly committed based upon the fact that he had a past history of mental illness and was indicating sympathy with radical Islamic views, including ISIS, I would say probably not. And I certainly don't think that there's an indication that just because he agrees, however abhorrent we think it is, with the views of ISIS or even the actions taken by ISIS, that's a basis for civil commitment.
Donald Stern, I want to hear from you on this and from Harvey Silverglate. We have just a couple of minutes left, which is this. If the young Chicolo did not talk about ISIS and did not talk about Islamic jihadist movements, if he had spouted something else, that he was going to be violent in another setting or just go to a college campus and do something terrible, do you think the FBI would have jumped on this in that same way? Would it then be looked at topically as a different matter, that it was mental illness? Donald, take you first.
Yeah, it's hard to know. I don't think we have all the facts. I think there was an effort probably here to separate the delusional statements from those where someone had a practical ability and willingness to act on them. And that's what the effort to present him with alternatives, which is, you want to buy weapons, we have some weapons available, etc. That's what that was designed to do, I think, to ferret out the difference between the delusional and untethered views versus somebody who was prepared and willing to act on it.
And Harvey Silverglate, what if Chicolo didn't mention ISIS, for instance, and mentioned, you know, something about Barnum and Bailey Circus? You know, do you think this would have gone the same way?
Well, I don't think he would have been at that point arrested by the FBI, but I think he would have been institutionalized. This was clearly a young man who was really quite mad. And I have to disagree with my friend Don Stern. I think it was very easy to get this kid committed, both initially for a three-day period and then for a further six-month period while he was being evaluated. This was a kid who was clearly crazy.
Briefly, Harvey Silverglate, we're giving you the last word here. What does this case possibly mean for others, in your opinion? Where do you intend to go, if anywhere, with your argument here?
Well, I think that the FBI acted here for its own self-aggrandizement. The fact that they released the statement tells me that this was partly a PR thing for the FBI, and I think that's a shameful motive for a law enforcement organization.
Well, there's plenty more to learn, as we talked about. We're all eager to understand more about who this family is, even. Harvey Silverglate, thank you so much for coming in today, criminal defense and civil liberties attorney. Appreciate having you here. David Boris, WBAR's senior reporter, thank you. And on the phone, former U.S. Attorney Donald Stern, thanks very much for being with us.
Coming up, the debate over sanctuary cities. There are six of them in Massachusetts. They protect or endanger the innocent. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Jill Kaufman.
This is Radio Boston.